It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. It's glad to be with you for the start of a new year.
Is it already a new year? How did we get here so fast?
You know, I was talking to somebody downstairs in the green room while we were waiting for Leonard, and they said, well, it's already 7 days into it. Come on.
Where you been?
Where are you? Well, look, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective, and our guest for today is Leonard Simcheck, and we're going to be talking about writing naked, right with your heart and soul.
You're not going to do that right here in front of me,
writing naked. Oh, well, let me share a story. I was telling Leonard this story. He said, oh, you got to share this on the radio. And I got an email back from one of my clients today who said, Doug, are you sure that the show title, I saw it in the newsletter, are you sure this is appropriate for your audience? And so I sent back an email and said, well, wait till you see the YouTube video. And when you do, I'll be the guy with the hat on.
I see. That's how they'll know you, right?
Yeah, and the reply I got back was, thank goodness you're wearing a hat. So anyhow. Well, look, we're really excited to have Leonard here. Leonard and I started talking last year about him being on the show, and then he snuck away from me and escaped to Australia, but he's back. And Leonard is an author, speaker, therapist, and writing coach. For the past 40 years, he's worked both in Australia and America as therapist, educator, and writer. He's the author of The Roadmap Home, Your GPS to Inner Peace, an Amazon bestseller, as well as Cuckoo Forevermore, a lighthearted satire on psychotherapy. Is there such a thing as lighthearted psychotherapy? We can talk about that. He's also ghostwritten a memoir for a Holocaust survivor, Silence and Secrets. And his second novel, Kookaburra's Last Laugh, will be published in just a couple months here. And then later in the year, his self-help book will be released called Fighting for Love, Turn Conflict into Intimacy, co-authored with Mari Frank, a mediation attorney. In addition to coaching, Leonard conducts seminars on writing and personal goals, and he's helped over 20 authors get their books into print. So, Leonard, welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio show.
Well, thanks, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. You know, you've been an easy guy to talk to up to now. We'll see how it goes now that we're on the air, but no, really. Well, look, tell us what you mean when you talk about writing naked. Let's get right to the heart of this.
All right. Well, you know, the new word these days is authenticity. I think we were talking about this downstairs. That's a new currency. So really, everything seems to be packaged these days, and I think that we do like authenticity, and that means someone who's able to reveal themselves and flaws and all. And I think that's the thing that when I talk about writing naked, it's about really revealing myself through my words. And whether you're coaching somebody, you're revealing yourself and your mistakes that you've made in your life so that others can learn from you, as opposed to presenting yourself as a really well-polished, well-organized coach. Well, of course, that may be the case, but in the process, we've had to gain a lot of wisdom through making mistakes. And so really, writing naked is about just putting my heart and soul into my life and letting others know that.
Now, I'm assuming that this is different than when people say, well, write about what you know. You're talking about the style more than knowledge. Is that?
Well, it's also write what you know, but also write with heart and soul. So that means be more naked about yourself. So let's give you an example. Like, I've been a therapist for 40 years. And in the Roadmap Home, Your GPS Inner Peace, I felt I had to reveal more of myself in the book. So it's not just giving theory, telling people what they should do, but it's also letting them know I'm just as human as everybody else, and I make mistakes, and I learn from my mistakes, and I'm sharing my life so that you can also learn too and be inspired to be more naked.
Well, you know, I know that in conversations, I feel like I get to know a person quicker when they've shared with me some of their imperfections.
Yes.
You know, but I had never really thought about that in terms of reading a book. Mm-hmm. Do I get more involved in the book because of that or not. But that's what you're saying.
Exactly. You know, when I buy a book, usually when someone buys a book, they first look at the cover.
Yeah.
Then they go to the back of the book, and then they open it up, and they might look at the who's the testimonials from.
Right.
And then they'll go into the introduction or the table of contents. And then the introduction is where the author really introduces themselves. That is where I get bought. That's where I get sold, so to speak, to say, are they going to reveal themselves in this book? Because those are the authors that I really gravitate toward, that I know that they are really revealing more of who they are. Because I really, really, readers want to get to know authors. They want to get to know who they are, not just that they're, you know, they're successful and they're at the top of their game, but they want to know how they got there. And how they got there means sometimes we have to fall in the mud.
You know, you just said something that my impression of what I know is different than what you said. So I'm not saying I'm right, you're wrong, but mm-hmm. my impression. And that is, my impression is that most people, when they read a book, don't pay a lot of attention to the introduction and all of that other information you mentioned. They go right into the meat of the book. And I find I can't do that. I want to know, what's the bias? What's the background? Where are you coming from as the author that you have that makes you credible or not credible in writing about this topic? But I'm interested in your opinion. My impression is that a lot of people that I know, they skip that.
You're right. I think that some people want to just leap into what the content is. To me, the introduction gives me two things. It shows me the writer's voice. How do they show the world who they are? And they do it through the words. So I usually can pick up the writer's voice very immediately. Think of this. Rush Limbaugh would have a certain voice, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Barack Obama would have. Ted Cruz. You have all these politicians. Each one has their own unique voice. And some of their voices will really resonate with us, and some of them will not. So in the introduction, I try to pick up what their voice is and what is their backstory. Because I don't know about you, I like reading people's backstory and knowing a little bit about them.
Well, you know, for me, it's a self-defense mechanism. I don't necessarily believe something just because it's inside the covers of a book. So I want to know who you are as an author to know whether I'm going to believe what you're saying.
Yes.
Do you have the credentials to make these statements?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. True. And so for me, if I was writing a book on parenting and I didn't have any children, and I said, well, I'm writing a book on parenting, and I'll tell you how to raise your kids, and I haven't had any children, well, that's going to influence whether people will think I'm credible or not. But if I say, well, I've raised two kids, they're 38 and 36, and parenting has been the hardest thing I've done in my life, and I'll share with you why and maybe some tools I've learned along the way, well, then the readers are going to be more inclined to read the book.
Okay, so help me a little bit. Writing with heart and soul.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked about it's sharing yourself, sharing some of your mistakes, some of your experiences. Is there more to it than that?
You know what it is? In writing, and I know your program is for coaches, and really every coach should have their own book out there. Every coach should really say, put together a book because this is their calling card, and all of their clients can read in a book what their theory is, what their background is, etc. So, you know, when you think about writing a book with heart and soul, what I think is the book has its calling. You know, everything that we write about is something that we're trying to learn, improve, or heal. So I'll give you an example. So I'm writing a book with my good friend and colleague, Mari Frank, Fighting for Love Turned Conflict into Intimacy. We're on our fifth draft. But I'll tell you, I've learned so much about conflict in my life by writing the book. So I've had to learn about the impact of conflict, that I tend to be a bit conflict adverse. I don't really like conflict. Not too many people do. But it forced me to really look at how I deal with conflict in my life and to grow and to expand and to use some of those tools that Mari and I have been teaching other people over many years. It's forced me to grow and learn about healing conflict within myself.
So the dual purpose of writing is not just to share your knowledge, it's to educate yourself, too.
That's right. Who's this? Marcy Shimoff wrote a book, Love for No Reason, and she says, be careful what you write, because all your issues about that topic will come up to be healed.
Well, you know, as coaches, I can't tell you how many coaches I've talked to that say, isn't it weird that all my clients have the same issues I have?
Well, the same thing is with therapists, Doug, because, you know, the strange thing is every client I'm working with is a mirror for me. And that one of the well-kept secrets in the therapy field is the illusion is that clients come to therapists and the therapist knows everything. Really, the client is coming to the therapist to help the therapist also heal.
We don't want to tell them that till after they've paid the bill.
There's no saying that those of us become therapists do so because we need 40 hours of therapy a week.
Well, I, you know, that's actually, that philosophy is one of the things that made me so comfortable with coaching, because the philosophy behind coaching is that we really don't, as a coach, have the knowledge. We have the tools to help the client unlock the things that are keeping them from realizing that they have the knowledge.
And don't you, with every client that you have, don't you learn something about yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's the beauty. When you're learning something while you're coaching a client, that means you have a really dynamic relationship.
Well, and the thing, I don't know if this applies to writing, but it does to coaching, is that as I'm coaching a client on an issue that is also my issue or has been my issue, I'm able to look at my issue with more objectivity because I'm not involved in it at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that follows with your writing.
Well, you know, in writing, it's, so let's say the fighting for love, it's really forced me to take a look at my relationship issues. So I've got some, you know, issues with attachment, and we all have our relationship issues, and find out what are they. And all of our relationship issues tend to stem from our upbringing and our caregivers growing up. And so for me, I've had to really look more deeply as to, wow, look at my parents were always fighting, they divorced, they always had conflict. And so their conflict impacted me. To even get into therapy as a profession to help other people, and if I help other people resolve conflict, in some way I'm helping myself.
So writing has changed your
life.
Oh,
my God. This writing is my therapy. Stephen King says writing is his therapy, and he writes novels. So, I mean, and writing novels means I'm projecting my inner issues out onto characters. I could read any novel, Doug, and I can tell you what the issues are in that writer. Because we project outward into characters. So if I have issues of empowerment, that's what's going to go out there. If I have issues of really opening myself up to love, that's going to be shown in my characters. Every issue I have, I'm going to be projecting outward into my characters.
Okay, I'm going to be more careful what I say. When did you start writing?
Well, you know, I started writing, oh, back in 1980, I was teaching positive mind powers. You know, this is back in Australia. I lived in Australia for 14 years. And it was 1980s, I was teaching positive mind powers. And I always like to give my students a challenge. It says, okay, at the end of this course, what do you want to do? And it would be a five-week course. And I says, I'm going to do something too. So we all had to make a declaration as to what we wanted to do.
Okay.
And I think, well, what would be the hardest thing I could do? I says, oh, write a book and get it published. I said, that should be a piece of cake using my mind powers. Just write a book and get it published. Well, it took me 8 years, 3,000 hours, 2 countries, 6 drafts before that book was published.
Oh, boy. Well, you've written novels, self-help books. You've even done some ghostwriting. Those are really different things, aren't they? Or are they similar from the writer's perspective?
Well, they are different in terms of genre. So fiction, obviously, we're looking at characters, we're looking at stories. Movies are made from fiction, or if it's made from a biography or actual real story.
A lot of movies that way these days.
These they are, yeah. And so my I tend to enjoy, my favorite is fiction because I get to play. It's like my playground.
Okay.
Self-help is really helps me take a look more concretely at specific areas like conflict, like finding our inner guidance system. And the memoir that I helped Yvonne write, she was a Holocaust survivor. And so I met with her several times to see if I really wanted to devote that time to, I wrote the book, produced the book, and published the book. But it was a phenomenal story. Oh, my God. Here's a Holocaust survivor. She never told her children, and she had an agreement with her husband that they wouldn't talk about the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
So no one knew about it. And then her husband had passed away, and she discovered postcards that he received from... him and his mother received from his father. His father was on the train going to Auschwitz, and he would write postcards saying, "Everything's going to be okay. I'm going to a work camp."
Oh.
You know. And but the strange thing was that her brother was on the same train transport going to Auschwitz. They were on this, and we found the document where we saw her husband's name and her brother's name. They were on the same transport, and then they ended up. Her and George ended up uniting together and then creating a family. But they never talked about the Holocaust because it was so painful. Her book, Science and Secrets, was her therapy, and it was her way of really breaking the silence and say, I'm not going to be silent anymore about the past. I'm going to, and she was very naked in revealing her story so they could touch other people's lives. And in the process, she did tremendous healing. As she said to me, Leonard, I revealed more to you than I ever have in my entire life. That's really healing.
That is. You know, we see that in coaching a lot. That it continues to amaze me after 20 years of coaching people, the things that relative strangers will tell me in
a
coaching conversation.
Yes. Yeah. And really, you act as a witness for them, don't you? You're kind of witnessing their
life.
It's
a safe place.
It is.
It's a safe place. Mm-hmm. It's, there's no judgment. They, mm-hmm. they can talk about what they want.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you're coaching naked.
Don't tell my wife. Well, look, there's a lot of other questions, but before I get to them, I want to ask you a question we ask every guest that's on the show. What's your guiding principle? What's your true north? What experience, what belief have you held constant that kind of gets you through life?
You know, the one belief I have is the belief in, I would say there's a higher power. There's a belief in that I have within myself my inner truth. And so whatever it is for individuals, for me, I can always go to my anchor, and that is my true self. Really getting beyond all the ego and everything, I can always go to my true self, and that is going to be my anchor. I call it my inner GPS.
Okay.
So, and I'm not talking about a religion. I'm talking more of our essence of who we are. I believe we're all spiritual beings on this human excursion, but that is my anchor.
That seems to play very well into what your goal is for this year that you were sharing with
it
me
is.
Before the show.
It is. It's really about trying to be as authentic as I can, stripping away from the ego. Remember, I was telling you downstairs, or was it upstairs?
Upstairs.
Upstairs. You know, I was sharing with you my intention for 2016 was to be more authentic, to live naked. And then I started the year feeling very uncomfortable. And strangely, I was wondering, well, geez, usually I'm enthusiastic, excited about the upcoming year. And I said, well, Leonard, what? Why are you so uncomfortable? And that's because of my intention that I really wanted to stretch myself, really wanted to be more real, not just show people, you know, my presentation to the world, but to really just be more real about who I am and my difficulties and moment by moment. And that creates discomfort. I think we were talking about because we've been taught to just present our positive,
the good side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of the good side, let's take a quick break for a commercial here, and then we'll come right back and continue this fascinating conversation.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay, and we're back with Leonard Simcheck, and we're talking about writing naked, although both of us are completely dressed here in the show. I just want to assure you that In fact, we better be, where the studio here has glass walls. So, Leonard, you made a statement earlier in the show. You said you just said it kind of casually, but I want to pin you down on it. Every coach should have a book, you said.
Yes.
Why do you say that?
I'll give you an example. My sister had esophageal cancer. Now, she's cured, but she went to two hospitals to do research about how to treat esophageal cancer. Both of them reputable hospitals with great staff. One hospital gave her a 60-page manual that had questions and answers. She chose that one because they gave her a 60-page that answered all the questions she had. That sold her on that particular hospital. And so for a coach to really be able to have clients and to relate to their clients, to me, a book is a phenomenal avenue for the coach to really identify what are the principles of coaching, what are you going to provide, and give an idea as to what my background is and my philosophy.
Okay. And I might just add, from a personal bias, if you haven't written your book yet, if you've got a radio show that you've been doing for going on 7 years, this could qualify too.
I would say so.
Mm-hmm. 7 years of talking, I think you probably know a little bit about me.
You're in the oral tradition. There's the oral tradition and the written tradition.
I am more like the Indian tribe,
you
passing
are.
Down the wisdom and the mistakes verbally.
You're a storyteller.
I'm a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
You got me right.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you said at the break that you want to talk about men's work. What are we talking about there?
Men's work has been very dear to me. And one of the reasons is when I was 6, my father left the family the first time. And then when I was 9, he left the second time for good. And back then, I didn't realize it, but he gave me a terrific gift. And the gift was that this tremendous desire to connect with other men, to have a father. So I went to the Catholic seminary where there are lots of fathers there.
Yes.
I eventually left, but I realized this really got me involved in men's work. I've been involved with men's work for over 30 years. And really, you know, as men, we've lost a lot of our forums to really connect. Back in the olden times, you sit around a campfire, share the hunt, share what happened. Well, we don't do that anymore. Where do we have a council of men that we could meet with other men and share our problems, our struggles, about relationship, about health, our changes in our life? And that really, because of my father, he really got me into this men's collective to really understand male psychology and then to run men's groups. So I've been running men's groups and been involved with men's groups to create councils of men. I was in a men's group in Chicago for 17 years before I moved to California 8 years ago. And wow, that helped me so much. That not only helped me, we helped each other. Being with other men to help, only we know what it's like to be men, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, and how am I going to find out about being a male unless I hear from it from other men or from other kind of father figures? And that's so important for us to evolve and grow and to teach children as well.
And, you know, I saw examples of that. I mentioned to you, for 18 years I had a franchise business, Renaissance Executive Forums, putting together groups of men and women, but mostly men. Mostly men because the women didn't want to be in the men's group. When I would approach them, they go, well, do you have a group for women? We'd like to be in it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this talk about, well, let's not recognize a difference in gender,
mm-hmm.
when it comes right down to it, we need our safe space with our gender that thinks the way we think. And
I believe that's very true, yes.
Yeah.
So we can feel safe. We don't have this competition, because you add a woman or several women into a men's group or with a group of men, and the men start getting kind of territorial. It changes the dynamics.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it doesn't work, but it does change it.
It does
make it different.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think it is important, especially probably in any place, but in business where we are so reluctant to disclose the honest truth about our business.
Mm-hmm.
We can't tell our partners. We don't tell our employees. So being in a group where you can discuss the honest truth,
mm-hmm.
and get some honest feedback has tremendous value.
You said two things. A, for us, and this is what being naked is about, express the honest truth and then to receive honest feedback. Really, in our culture, where do we really get honest feedback, and where can we feel safe enough just to speak our truth? That's so important.
Yeah, it is.
Because that gives us meaning to our lives.
So if you're wondering where to get it in the audience there, look for a group that you can join. Mm-hmm. Hire a coach. Coaches are honest. They'll give you honest feedback, brutally honest feedback. Speaking of coaches, what suggestions do you have for coaches when it comes to writing?
Well, you know what I would do is for, let's say, coaches who don't have a book, and I'm coaching a number of coaches who to get their books out there.
Good.
One's writing on transformational leadership. The first thing is to find out, what is your message? What is the message of my book? Now, strangely, as you start writing a book, the book has its own dharma, meaning it has its own life. It's like, you know, you say, I'm gonna birth a child. But then you can have your vision for your child, but the child has its own personality that's going to start to evolve. It's the same thing with a book.
Okay.
So you can have a concept. This is my concept, my message. But then the book's going to breathe its own life. So first get a clarity about your message. Know what your who your audience is. You got your message. You got your audience. And you're going to be fitting your message to your audience. I remember reading a thing about Pat Riley, who used to coach the L.A. Lakers.
Yeah.
And he said that the voice he uses in the locker room is very different than when he's talking to reporters. So you have to know your audience. If you're speaking in the locker room to your basketball players, you're going to use a different communication style to talk with them. And if you're talking with reporters, you'll speak differently. So know who your audience is. So you've worked with corporate clients, Doug.
Correct.
So that might be your clientele. You're going to be writing your book towards corporate clients. My clientele tends to be more people who are in this this road towards self-discovery, self-growth. And so, and for me, I mean, that's been my livelihood, and it's my passion as well. So I love helping people discover more about themselves. So that's more my audience. I don't really work with corporate clients like you do. So it's trying to know, who is my audience, what's my message, and then I can start crafting my book, putting together an outline of what I want to say. And then there's an arc of a book, meaning you go from chapter 1 to chapter 10. Usually, if you look at most books these days, they've got 10 chapters. So just think 10 chapters, you know? 10 chapters, and then you say there's an arc of a book, meaning it goes from beginning to the end as to how you want to craft your message. Okay. So let's say, you know, the message may be, okay, I want to help you become more of a transformational leader. How am I going to help you do this? So you have to take it. What is not a transformational leader? What are the steps to get there? So there's a arc of a book that really takes you from the beginning to the end.
Okay. You know, you just brought up a point I want to say something about, because I'd like to get your feedback on it. There is so much emphasis, maybe in a book, on who are you writing it for, who's your audience, as you just mentioned, or in a business, in understanding who's your niche, who are you marketing to. And in both of those questions, I find people looking for labels like, Doug, your clients are corporate clients. Now, that describes who pays me, but the clients are individuals, and the individuals have different personalities. And you can look at my corporate clients, which is a legal definition of who they are, but you would describe them different if you looked at the personalities of the individuals. And you might say, these are all highly independent, self-made people, whether they own the company or not. So I think that's probably important in a book, too, is understanding really who the reader is, not just putting an arbitrary label on it, like Doug reads fiction. That isn't going to help you.
No, and I think that you start looking at the demographics. So I was just at a workshop just the other day, and the woman had a book, but the book was Empowering Yourself as a Woman. She was very clear. That's what her book, she was targeting a woman's audience, so she wrote the book for women. And having a niche makes it a little bit easier to sell as well, because if it's a global audience, well, who is this global audience? So it's having a little niche. So yes, you may have, or your corporate clients are individuals, so you can say, well, who are these individuals? What are some of the demographics of these individuals? And I'm going to write stories, so because it's going to affect you as a storyteller, what stories do I want to write that will give examples to these individuals, that will touch their hearts? So let's say you're working with individuals and a lot of them have sailboats. So you might want to use metaphors and stories about sailing, mm-hmm. because that's going to touch them. If they have dogs, then you're going to use dog stories. So you want to have stories that's going to touch their hearts.
So the demographic is the key. The demographic.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. can extrapolate back, put a label on it, but it's the real demographic.
And you know, the other thing, the secret sauce to good writing is emotions. You really want to get your emotions out there. So if I can let my readers know, I always know if I want my readers to cry, I got to be crying when I'm writing this little passage. And if I want them to laugh, I'm laughing. So I was coaching a woman this morning, and it's a great lady. Her book is called Blue Satin Nightgown, A French Makeover at Age 78. So here's a woman at age 78. Her husband had passed away. She always wanted to live in France. So she lived in France for 2 years. She didn't know anybody. She didn't know the language. She moved. She sold her house, or she sold her stuff, and she moved to France to live 2 years, knowing nobody, no language. So her book is about inspiring others to live their dream.
I want to read that.
Great book. Yeah. It means no matter what your age is, you can inspire. You can be inspired to live your dream. I says, oh, that is. And so we were laughing because some of the stories are just hilarious, especially about the blue satin nightgown.
Yeah, I can imagine. You mentioned you also do workshops. Tell us a little bit about your workshops. What are they primarily
doing? You know, most of my workshops are writing workshops, so I have two. One is Write Your Book and Get It Published, and the other one is Writing Naked, Write with Heart and Soul. You're fully clothed in that particular workshop, too. And I find that the small workshops where writers will come, or people who are coaching or wanting to expand parts of their business, or want to just, they have a message, a mission or purpose that they want to fulfill. And in the workshops, we look at some of the specifics about how to get your book into print. So let's say I've written 3 books, and I've got 4 coming out this coming year. And so writing a book is not hard for me because I know the system, I know the process.
Right.
Many people feel overwhelmed, like, oh my goodness, how do I write a book? Really, it's not that difficult once you've been through the process. It's just a matter of, as you know, being coached through the process, so someone's holding your hand, how to get it published, whether you go through traditional publisher, e-books, etc., crafting the book, putting it into a form, a template, and then getting it out into the public.
Let's talk a little bit about the impact on books mm-hmm. of social media. Okay, I mean, we have books that have gone from books that you read, books that you listen to, e-books that are so convenient to get, that are self-published, that make it so much easier for people to put out good and bad mm-hmm. material. Mm-hmm. And then we've got this whole arena of social media. We've got people posting lengthy dissertations on LinkedIn or Facebook or podcasts. Or where do you think this is going? Is the book on the way out? Is the medium of or the need for quick, instant gratification going to be satisfied with these short blurbs on our electronic?
This is a great question. Great question, because books have changed. Books are no longer really thick. People want smaller books to read. If it's a self-help book, or they want a smaller book that they can digest in chunk sizes. So that's one thing that people are looking for. The other thing is books are changing. So e-books are, there's been an explosion of e-books. And in e-books, you could have links to video.
Yeah.
I think the new books that are evolving are going to be books with video. So you put it onto your tablet, you press the link, and there's a interview with the author explaining some of these concepts. It's going to be very interactive. The other thing is that people tend to think that I'm going to write my book, and once the book's out there, then I'll get it out into the public. The new way of doing it these days is that it's all interactive. So before I publish my book, I will hopefully will have interacted with my audience, and they're giving me feedback on my material to see whether I need to add more or less.
You know, I've been amazed. Some of best-selling authors, not of fiction, but of self-help or business books, I see them posting chapters.
Yes.
While they're in the progress
Absolutely.
Of writing the book.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's like, wait a minute, how are you going to sell the book if you're giving away the chapters?
Because it's interactive. When I did the Roadmap Home, what I did is I set up a teleseminar. I asked for people to, would you like to be part of a 10-week seminar? I'm going to send a chapter a week. And so I had about 40 people in my group. And I had two groupings, and I would send a chapter a week, and then have a teleconference and get feedback from them. And that would tell me whether I'm on the right track. And this, geez, I love this story, or this graph didn't make much sense. Because of their feedback, I was able to take my book to a whole nother level. Now, some of the feedback I didn't like to hear, like there was one feedback that the people says, you know, Leonard, this chapter is too long. It needs to be broken into two. And I had a template and I had exercises for each chapter. And I think, wow, this is going to be a lot more work to break one chapter into two chapters because they have to add a lot more material. But the audience was correct. They knew that the chapter was too long and I had to create two chapters. So if I was open to the feedback from my listeners, from my readers, boy, Doug, if anybody's writing a book, that's why we're interacting with social media, because we're finding out what resonates with our audience. That is the new way to write a book.
Wow. So instead of going off in the corner and isolating myself for the next 6 months and writing my book, I need to be interactive with the potential audience, with the demographics that I'm writing for.
Yes, you know, and what I would do with my books, I would give a talk. I belong to Toastmasters. And so I would take a chapter, and that talk would be crafted around that chapter. And so I'd speak my chapter to the audience, and I get feedback. And I can tell what's resonating, what's not resonating. The new books these days, the best books, there is an interactive interchange before the book actually gets published, which is really quite exciting.
Yeah, I hadn't really heard that. That's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the medium is interesting too. You know, I read personally 3 or 4 books a week. In fact,
wow,
one of the resolutions, a lot of it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 2/3 of it's fiction, 1/3 of it's business.
That's my favorite as well. Yeah,
you know, and part of my New Year's resolution was, you know, am I wasting time reading books, you know? Do I do too much reading, sticking my nose in a book and ignoring the world, you know? But if the alternative is television, I'll keep reading books. So, but I've gone from paper books to electronic books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having not a lot of luck finding a lot of interactive e-books, mm-hmm, with video clips and that. The few that I have found, I really enjoyed. I mean, boy, because I live on my tablet. I don't have any bookshelf space for more paper books.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this idea that we're looking at interactive.
Interactive is very important. And, you know, in many ways, even the paper books are interactive. So I'm a bookaholic. So it's very hard for me to go into a bookstore or a library or a resale place without getting books. Now my place is filled with books, but I love books. And I interact with them. So sometimes if I have a problem, I'll be contemplating on a problem, and I'll be guided to a book. I'll open it up, and it'll give me some guidance. Yeah. I love that about books. The authors are guiding me, helping me live my life. We've got so much information out there. It's just incredible. So I still like holding a book in my hand. I mean, I have the tablet, but I love holding a book. This gives me so much pleasure. I used to love going to the bookstores, get a coffee, read my books, but bookstores, the brick-and-mortar bookstores are disappearing, you know?
I don't miss holding a book in my hand.
You don't?
I thought I would, but mm-hmm, I don't miss it. Part of it is I'm able to read under any lighting conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I can adjust the print size, the mm-hmm, backlighting, all mm-hmm, that takes away any reading issues. What I miss is the ability to give my book to you and say, Leonard, this book was great. I want you to read it, and then let's talk about it.
Yes.
Electronically, that's just not there these days.
No, unless other people buy the electronic version.
Yeah, which doesn't let me give it to you.
Yeah, and the electronic version, really, that is the book of the future. I mean, it is. I mean, you look at the younger generation, they're getting tablets in school, they're working on computers, they're not going to be picking up books. Even some textbooks are all just downloaded for people. That's the new generation.
But I like your observation that books need to be shorter, or they need to be in segments so that people can pick it up, get what they're looking for, put it down, and then either come back to it or be done with it.
Yes, I coached a woman who is a yoga breath worker, and her book was, I think, only 40, 45 pages. But what it did in the 40, 45 pages, she was able to clearly identify what her process was about breathing, her breathing techniques, and what the readers would get out of these processes. So for her, it was only a 40, 45-page book. And that was perfect, served the purpose. You don't have to have a 200-page book anymore, Doug. You can have a 40 to 60-page book and really get your content out there.
So you've written all kinds of books. So talk to me about the genre that is the business book written around a fictional story, which I see more and more. That it's like it's too hard to tell you. You're not going to read my dull tome about how to coach. But if I make up a fictional character and tell a story about somebody learning how to coach, talk to me about that.
This is great. That's what I do in my novels. So my first book was called Cuckoo Forevermore, which is a satire on psychotherapy. And it's kind of putting the fun back into dysfunction. In my the sequel, which is coming out in a couple of months, Cuckoo Bear's Last Laugh, the main character is a psychologist, a neurotic psychologist living in Australia. So my ideas about finding home, because that's been a theme of mine, is how can I find home? Because when I was a kid, when my father left, my mother took us to an orphanage, and with the prospect that we may live there if she couldn't care for us. She was a factory worker on the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
As it turned out, we never did live in the orphanage, but boy, that really made me realize I could lose my home in an instant.
Wake-up call.
That's it. Yeah. That was my wake-up call. And so that was my quest to find home. And so I took that theme, and that is in a novelized form. So the main character is also trying to wrestle with finding his way home. All of us love stories. It's part of our genetic stories. We love stories too. Wow. Don't you, Doug, when someone says, they start off with a story, I just sit back and say, oh, good, I'm just going to give me the popcorn. I'm ready to listen to the story. But if you say, I'm going to give you 5 tools to improve your business.
Snore.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. But the story engages us. We get characters. And the message that we can convey through story, entertaining stories, that's what movies are. Movies are entertaining stories, and hopefully they have a moral message to it.
You know, the thing that I'm looking for to happen is that in my fiction books, some of my favorite all-time fiction books are books written by an author that has developed a character, fictional character, that he's extended the character through 10, 15, 20, 30 books. So I got to really know this character because I've lived with him through all these different episodes. I'm waiting for somebody to do this with a real serious book, like your book, where it's not just a one-off, but you continue that character, their adventures on through.
And you see them evolving as
you
a character, which I love.
Yeah.
So I want to see the characters evolve. How are they when at this particular age or development, and then how do they evolve?
Okay. We're getting short to running out of time here, so let's get through some mechanics here. How do people get a hold of you? If they want to just learn more about you, if they want to attend your workshops, if they want to talk to you about helping them write their book?
Well, I have a website, leonardsimchek.com, but the simplest way is just go to roadmaphome.com.
That's easier to spell.
It is. With my Polish last name, it's very difficult. So just go to roadmaphome.com. That gets you to my website, and then there will be a tabs for seminars. Just go to writing seminars, and it's all there, and show my material and what I have to offer. So roadmaphome.com.
Roadmaphome.com. Okay. And besides your website, any other social medias that you're active in?
You know, I'm on Facebook, leonardsimchek.com. But again, you know, as you try, everyone always asks me, how do you pronounce your last name? Because there's all these Z's and there's only one vowel. So, yes, then go to on Facebook, Leonard Szymczak, S-Z-Y-M-C-Z-A-K, which is... It's a bit of a mouthful. It's like alphabet soup.
Anything else as we get ready to wind up here that you want to share with the audience or that you want to go back and cover
more?
Yeah,
you know, what I want to cover is growing up, we're taught to be nice, act nice, say the right things, or be quiet. That's really our upbringing. And that's part of, and I raised two kids, and so I know that it was easier to have kids who did what I wanted them to do. But I think our challenge, Doug, is to really find our inner truth, our inner voice, so that we're not just adapting and accommodating to society, not just being like everybody else, but we really are here to find out our own inner talents and gifts and to share ourselves with the world. That's really what we're meant to do. If each of us just can be our true self, wow, this is going to be a much better world. And I think we work to make the world a better place. So I would encourage everyone, take time, be naked, be uncomfortable, speak your truth, and you're going to find yourself blossoming and growing, being uncomfortable, but in the end result, you're going to be one heck of a human being.
Okay, you heard it here. You tuned in to find out how to write naked. Instead, you've heard Leonard Szymczak talk about how to live naked. You know, I think there's a lot to it. Leonard, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure. I'll look forward to having you back later in the year when your new book is out and you can talk to us about it.
Oh, I'd love to, Doug. Thank you very much. You've been a fabulous, gracious host.
Well, thank you. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio community. Well, look, we've been listening to Leonard Szymczak. This is our first broadcast of the year. Thank you for listening to it. It's certainly not our first broadcast. We've got many years of broadcasts. You can find them. Well, you're probably, if you're listening live, you have to go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com, or dgefeller, dgefeller.podbeam. It's as bad as Szymczak. And you can find our vast inventory of past guests and some great ideas and great shows and material and learning that just never grow old. Well, look, I hope you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas, new perspectives, and information that you can, most importantly, put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach and all-around naked guy, Doug Feller.